To see examples of what we talk about on this episode, along with further information, go to bunchofdorks.com.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to
Two Dimension Podcast,
the comic book podcast
with no direction.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to Two Dimension Comics, the comic book podcast with no direction. This is episode 194, and I'm your host, Dallas. And in a shocking twist, I'm not on this episode. Don and Al recorded episode 194, but the first half has mysteriously vanished, most likely into another dimension. So you can learn what that first half was about by visiting our blog at bunchofdorks.com. There's also links to some articles that Al discussed on that missing piece. Anyway, I'm going to take this opportunity to thank all of our friends and supporters on Facebook and to plug all our stuff. So, like I said before, check out our blog. It's bunchofdorks.com. It's got all of our previous episodes, lots of high-resolution images. Don's been working hard to add some great content, including a top 10 list by each member of the podcast. So do me a favor, check out the site so Don will stop whining to me about it. We've also got a YouTube page with just a few videos on it. If we can get some more support, we'll find the time to upload some new content. So check that out as well. Tell us what you think. We'd love some feedback. We can also be found on iTunes and Stitcher Radio. And we've got a contact page if you want on our blog if you want us to review a comic that you've made. So you can just kind of, you know, get a hold of us either on Facebook or our blog, you know, say, you know, I've made this comic and I'd like you guys to read over it and, you know, discuss it on the podcast. If you're a musician or if you know one and you'd like us to play your music on an episode, please submit using our contact page. And lastly, Free Comic Book Day is the first week in May. So find a store near you and support your local comic shop. All right, without further ado, we return you to your regularly scheduled podcast.
Yeah.
And we're back. And that was one of my favorite bands, The Cramps, with the song Garbage Man from the album Songs the Lord Taught Us, that was produced by Alex Chilton. So, of course, you know all roads lead to Alex Chilton.
Yeah, it's been a while.
You've
been off the Alex Chilton
run. I still listen to it, but I haven't put it on the show. But
yeah, the Cramps are somebody who's interesting. Remember, there was a movie I saw on Showtime or HBO when I was, I guess I was right before, between college and the Navy. It was about these punk girls called the Stains.
Oh, yeah, Introducing the Stains.
Yeah, the Stains. I remember seeing that.
I never saw that movie.
Yeah, I don't know. It's one of those movies when I watch it, what is this? But then I always think about it all the time, because I didn't see the whole movie, but basically she was sleeping. They were touring. It was three girls. And they kind of sang, they weren't great, they sang in unison, kind of, and one of them played guitar. And they had this weird eye makeup. You know, they were like, I guess high school girls, they acted like how girls act in middle school. And kind of snide and, you know, catty. But they had lingerie. They sang in, like, you know, see-through negligees. They're kind of trashy.
Okay.
And they called them, I guess they called their, call themselves skunks, or the girls that listen to those skunks. But they were kind of trashy and nasty sounding. And the one that was putting the songs here, was kind of leader of the band, she was just nasty. And but they were touring with this punk band, you know, that was pretty good. And she started sleeping with the singer for that band. And as the tour went on, they started, all of a sudden it switched and the punk band had opened for them. I'm like, really?
Huh.
Yeah, they just started building momentum, and then she basically just brushed the singer off like he was nothing. So they're going out, and that band's opening, and that punk band's really, you know, he turns flips, and he's singing, he's doing all this stuff, and they're giving everything they got, and the whole audience is nothing but skunks, and they're booing them. And then I remember the guy, he finally stops, he had an English accent, he says, all right, okay, miss, I'm not a miss, I'm a skunk. Okay, Miss Skunk, how much do you pay for all this? How much you pay for all this? You know, she had a T-shirt that said Skunks or whatever, the Stains. And so, you know, you think that she cares for you? She doesn't care anything for you. You're just getting your money and all that, and you're giving her everything. And basically, he turned the audience against the Stains, you know, from what I remember. And then I guess they were booted off the tour, and everybody hated them. And so she's walking with his eye makeup and a negligee, and then she sees the girl walk by with a boombox, and they're playing their song. And then she starts laughing to herself, like she, you know. And then all of a sudden it ends with this MTV-like video of those three girls. But it's like any video you see of the Go-Go's or anybody else. Remember, they were kind of doing a dance and swinging their heads back and forth, and they were dressed like Wax from World War II. You know, it was a retro video. That's the same band. And then all of a sudden there's a voice over her saying something about, and that's the end of my story. That's how we started. So I don't know how the movie started out, but basically it's everything you ever hear about a punk band or some type of garage band like that. And then they end up becoming something that they swore they'd never become later, but she was successful. It's,
yeah, typical rock and roll story, whatever, sell out.
But anyway, whenever I hear of the Cramps, somebody I worked with a long time ago interviewed them for a local magazine here, and I didn't know who they were, but I read it, and I thought, they're really interesting. I guess they traveled in a van, and the guy interviewed the two ladies in the van, and then he saw, one thing you're talking about is when CDs were the new thing. So weird. Now they're dying out.
Now they're dying out, yeah.
But she was saying, well, it's unfortunate because they were all record collectors. You know, I didn't really like CDs.
Yep.
And one other thing, they were asking about heavy metal, if, you know, they had any, I can't remember what the question was, something about, were they influenced in heavy metal, or did they feel they influenced heavy metal? And I remember the lady guitarist said, well,
Poison Ivy.
She said, heavy metal is basically just a reaction from Catholic boys that grew up. And I thought, I never thought of it that way. I always thought heavy metal is, you know, it's supposed to be the Antichrist and everything else. I thought, yeah, it's basically they grew up in that environment, so they, you know, just
Well,
that's their reaction.
In Black Sabbath, there's that one song, Black Sabbath, where like he sees the devil and he goes, "Jesus save me," or something like that. So it's very. And then they did another song on, I think, Master of Reality, about like people. It was a song about people criticizing the Pope or whatever. So I was like, okay, you know, I guess Geezer Butler's a devout Catholic or what?
Is he really?
I don't know. I think he might have been at some point. I don't know.
People always thought that they were singing about satanic things and stuff. I said they grew up in a steel town in England. It was all gray and dull and no hope. And so that's what they sang about. It was what they knew. It wasn't anything to do with religion.
Well, you know the deal with Iommi, right? That he like two of his fingers got cut off in an accident.
I heard about that.
Yeah, he was. They actually had a cartoon about it on VH1. He was working in like some kind of a factory where they cut metal. And he was going to join a band, and he was like, "Hey, Mom, I went home to eat lunch." He goes, "Hey, Mom, you know, I got the gig with the band. I think I'm going to quit the shop." And she goes, "Oh, you can't let them down. You have to go and finish the day's work." So when he went and finished the day's work, he's putting a piece of metal, and that's when he cut off the tips of two of his fingers. And like, and the boss is like, "Oh my God!" Took him to the hospital, and they're basically going like, "Man, those are like your guitar, these fingers, you know, the left hand or whatever, or the right hand. I forget, I think he's left-handed. I don't remember. You're going to look at the guitar again." And he was like totally like bummed out because he was getting ready to join a band and he had to quit and all that. So then, like after he got better, he started messing around and he found some bottle of some ointment or something. And he started putting it on his fingers. He's like, "Hey, you know, I think I can play like this." But then he goes, "But it's kind of difficult." So he goes, "Maybe I can like get banjo strings and lower the gauge of the guitar so the fingers will be easier to like play." And he did, and that's how he got that freaking Black Sabbath style, because he like put like these two plastic pieces on his fingers and he lowered the string gauge to like, you know, whatever it was, banjo string. And then he was able to get do all that, you know, the crazy power chords or whatever. And that's how they got the Black Sabbath sound.
Wow.
So there you go. There's actually a cartoon of it that they play on MTV or VH1 every once in a while, you know? So go figure. And like apparently like when he lowered the gauge, he put the banjo strings and he lowered the gauge of the, that became like a thing afterwards, you know, because before that every guitar player played like a, you know, whatever. I'm not technical on it, so I don't know what it is, but it was due to his accident that he had to reach, that he had to change his guitar style, change the string. And he came up with that sound, which is now like the father of heavy metal. So go figure.
Yeah, it is. That's a big game changer.
So you know, go figure.
I've heard elements of this story, but you know,
hopefully I got it right. Maybe Scott Conner seems like he's a metal guy. He might be able to.
Yeah, he knows all those.
He
things.
Knows all the the lore.
Yeah, it's actually I learned a lot from him. I didn't know Iron Maiden. I thought they were American. I didn't know.
No,
they're
English. British.
And yeah, I never knew. But yeah, Scott's the authority on all that
stuff. Yeah, he'll know, yeah.
But, yeah, I've heard stuff like that, and I've always heard he had metal tips. But, you know, I'd always hear from guys that didn't really know too much but acted like they did, and I'd hear this, "Oh, I don't know about that." But, yeah, I've heard elements.
I saw it on TV, so it's got to be true, right?
Yeah, TV makes
it
true.
It's got to be true, man.
All right, well, we've done quite a bit. We talked about the comics environment, I guess. I have a book I saw on the wall, and it wasn't one I had no intention of buying it, but I like the cover.
Commandy.
The Commandy Challenge from DC.
Whoa, this cover looks like...
Bruce Timm.
Oh, so Bruce Timm. I was going to say, it looks like Darwin Cook, but...
Hmm. Yeah, well. But one thing I like about the cover, on the side, it's got Jack Kirby. A little circle with Jack Kirby's head.
Oh, yeah, I see that.
And I think it says 100 years. It would have been his 100th birthday.
Oh, my.
But, you know, the old Captain Marvel comics from Fawcett, they always had on the side, you know, a circle with the character by the title. I always thought there was a neat touch. When Darwin Cook did the Spirit for DC, he had the same thing. He'd have whatever character was spotlighting the issue. He'd have a circle in. I thought, that's a neat graphic element. So, anyway, I like the Bruce Timm cover. I really like the Jack Kirby head on the side. And I thought, all right. And I thumbed through it, and Keith Geffen did the first story.
Yeah, it looks like Keith Geffen, yeah.
Now, one thing about him, when he did the OMAC reboot, I really liked it. He was channeling Kirby, but it was his own kind of Kirby style. Now, he did the first issue of the Forever People, and I got that one. It was okay. I was never a big Forever People fan. But it wasn't quite the same, and then the next issue was somebody different. So this one I got, it's not quite as good as the Omac stuff, but I thought it's good enough. Well, the second story is drawn by somebody else.
Dale Eaglesham.
Which I like better.
Yeah, it's really nice art, yeah.
And I was surprised. I just got it just to kind of look through it. The story continued on, but it's a little different than the regular Commandy story. Like, he's looking for his parents, which wasn't the issue. In the original Jack Kirby Commandy, he left the bunker with his grandfather. His grandfather died and told him, you got to get out. And the bunker, I guess, was Command D. And that was the name. But he didn't know any other reality except him and his grandfather. In this one, he wakes up and he's basically, he has a grandmother. He's got, it's like a typical American nuclear family, the whole neighborhood. He knows Jack Kirby, I think, is the postman. Well, what is this? Well, it turns out that's not real. It was a bunch of robots trying to keep him there. Then he goes out and it's all animals. And then the second story continues on with it, but I thought this is actually kind of interesting. One, he's more of a badass than he was in the Jack Kirby books. He seems a little sure of himself and he knows how to fight. And he's had some training, but he's talking about other people. And, again, he's searching for his family. Well, I got that. I thought, well, this is pretty good. I enjoyed it, but I didn't really have any attention. I think there's supposed to be 12 issues, and it says the Commandy Challenge. And what does the cover say?
Can you solve it before they do?
Yeah, can you solve it before they do? Well, I had no intention of getting another issue.
But, you know, I just noticed something about that kind of like, kind of tweaks me a little bit. $4.99. Really?
Yeah.
$4.99? Come on, DC.
Again, that was the other thing. Well, yesterday, when I'm talking to that lady at Wilson's.
Is she two?
No.
$3.99.
Issue three. But Amanda Connor did this one. I've seen her work before. I think I've got a couple of books that she's drawn. I'll tell you.
She is
greatness.
Yeah, she's a nice artist.
But this story, Commandy is jumping off of a mountain, and there's a ship with a turtle captain and an anteater executive officer, and they have him through binoculars, and they say, we got to save him, and they send these bats out. Well, the thing is, when Jack Kirby drew all these animals, they all look like Jack Kirby thuggish animals, and even though each kind of animal thing was a little bit different, you know, how they acted, it was all still kind of the same template. This one, it's more of a fantasy thing. You know, that turtle seems kind of like he has no clue, even though he's a little mean. And anyway, they try to get Commandy and get him on the ship. They're on some giant super tanker that's almost like a forest inside. And there's a voice telling him, watch out, there's eyes everywhere. You be careful what you say. Turns out, it's a bug talking to him. Commandy can hardly see. Well, later when the turtle captain and the anteater come out and they're talking to him, basically they're saying he's a messenger from God. And then that little bug comes and talking and says, be careful what to say. The anteater, you know, sticks his sticky tongue out, gets him and eats him. And he goes, oop, and that's it. Well, later on, when they're talking about all the eyes and watching, it's the bugs. The bugs are watching, he says, and relays it on to the captain. But the captain says, as soon as I saw you, I knew you were the one. He said, what are you talking about? I don't even know who I am. And he has a photograph, and it has Commandy as a younger man with a mother and a father behind him, but the picture's torn at the top, so you don't see who they are. So you can take us to wherever this promised land is. Well, that's different than the Kirby stuff. It has more of a fantasy element to it.
Mm.
And again, Commandy's pretty tough. He knows how to fight. But it goes from this hodgepodge group of animals on this super tanker to bats attacking them. And then I think it's cheetahs get them. And he's with this plant woman. And then at the very end, Don't give it away, but that's awesome. So anyway, I got the second one. The third one. It's pretty good. I don't know who. I'm guessing each.
Each is a different team.
Yeah, they're written different because the first issue it says Abnett, DiDio, Eaglesham, Geffen, Koblish, Hi-Fi. The third one says Palmiotti, Connor, and Mounts.
Yeah.
But, I don't know. I like it. Commandy is a book. When I was a kid, I remember seeing advertisements for the first issue, and I really wanted it. I don't think I had got one to about the fourth issue. So I got them sporadically. I'd get one every once in a while. As it got up in the higher numbers, I really started eating it up. I was buying them all the time. I find them in the dollar box all the time. I just read two of them. I think we talked about them on the show.
Oh, you mean the old Commandies?
Yeah, the Kirby Commandies. Yeah. I always liked them. After Jack Kirby left, some other people picked up the title for a while. They weren't quite the same and went away. I think they tried to bring it back, and when DC did the Wednesday's comics in the newspaper, Ryan Sook, I think, drew them. I think Dave Gibbons wrote it. Those were neat. I remember Dallas looked through it and goes, man, I like the Commandy. But the thing is, they don't really... That's an art to do on a book somebody else did that everybody remembers. Is if you just try to continue what they're doing, you're not them. You're not going to do it. But
you don't want to deviate too much.
Exactly, but you don't want to make it something else. This one, again, the Wednesday's Comics Commandies is pretty neat. You know, it looked kind of like if Hal Foster did it is what he made it look like. But it's still kind of more the same thing, which I thought. But this one, you can tell it's Commandy. But this would be like, I guess if they ever made a Commandy movie, it'd be like this, because it does deviate some from what Jack Kirby did, but it still has the same feel and flavor. I don't know. I might, if I see the other books and there's nothing else pressing, I might pick them up. I really enjoyed the third issue.
It looks really nice, yeah.
But the third issue, I read that yesterday when I left Wilson's. I really liked this a lot.
Yeah, I remember she used to do Vampirella, and it was okay. I wasn't really thrilled about it. But when she did the Watchmen book, forgot which one it was. She drew one of the Watchmen books. It was like, man, this art's really nice, and this looks beautiful.
I think she did the one that Darwin Cook wrote.
Yeah, she did the one that Darwin Cook wrote.
Spectre.
Yeah, it was really pretty. Really beautiful art. That's awesome art. Yeah, I like that a lot.
Like I said, I know I've got a couple of books that she drew. I mean, she wasn't a regular artist. She just filled in. I've heard her on podcasts. I hear people talk all the time.
They live in Tampa, her and Palmiotti.
Is she married to him?
I think so. Yeah. Well, either they're living together, but they live in Tampa.
They're a couple.
Yeah, I'm guessing they're living somewhere in the Tampa area.
Right, the Bay Area.
Bay Area, yeah.
No, that book Rook likes, Rat Queens, you know.
Yeah.
She's not the artist on that, but I guess the first trade, they have her cover, and it's staggering. Because when I saw the cover, maybe I should read this. Well... it's different, but the cover, besides being well drawn, it was a neat click. You know, it was a neat design. She knows how to design things besides being a good artist.
Yeah.
And that's something. And like I said, I see them once in a while. I know I got a couple of books, and I've seen character designs she's done for I don't know what projects they are. I saw somebody tell me, look at these. It was like a character design site. Really unique. She's a really good artist.
Yeah,
even though I've never really read too many things she's done.
I don't think she does a whole lot.
Really?
I don't think so. I mean, like, but then you're talking to a guy that doesn't go to a comic shop on a regular basis, so.
It seems to me, the ones I've seen, it's kind of like she's a hired gun. She just pops up every once in a while.
Yeah, I think so.
But she doesn't really...
And it's usually her with Palmiotti, which is cool.
Well, he's a good writer. She's a good artist.
He used to be an anchor years
ago. That's right.
He used to be an anchor.
He was also an artist. But he's a well-known writer, and he's really clever.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, it's good stuff.
And when I hear him on podcast, he's scary. He sounds like a New York wise guy or something, like a mobster. He's got a real heavy accent. I said, this guy writes comics? I didn't know who he was. I was really scared the whole time I heard him. I mean, he's, you know. Anyway, one of my favorite episodes I ever did was when you and I talked about Tigra. Mm-hmm. You know, that whole episode absolutely has remained one of my favorites. And Patsy Walker, a.k.a. Hellcat, was coming out. Mm-hmm. And we talked about it at the end, but I said I wasn't going to buy it. And then I ended up buying it, subscribing to it. For the past six issues, I've thought about just telling them, it's good. I've always liked it. But after a while, I'm thinking, you know, I don't know if I want to keep going. Well, I just pulled out issue 16. And at the end it says, I could kind of tell they were planning on wrapping it up. And at the very end it says, well, what you're holding next issue is the last issue.
Oh.
So I guess it's been popular, but I guess not enough to keep it going. I'll be honest with you, I think they should have done that on the 12th issue. Just said it's good enough and leave it and tightened up the story some. But it's fun. You talked about, when we did the Tigra episode, that Hellcat ended up being married to Damien Hellstrong and moved to hell.
And well, died and got brought
yeah.
back.
Yeah, well, they've covered some of that in there, besides the old Patsy Walker and Millie the Model stories and Hetty. And they basically, Hetty, who's caused all the trouble for her, gets Damien Hellstrong to come back.
Yeah, I saw Satan in there, in the Son of Satan.
There's all kinds of stuff going on in this. It's been fun. Howard the Duck has been a little bit. She-Hulk has disappeared, and she's trying to, you know, because she was friends with She-Hulk. She has a temp agency. I liked it. No regrets. I enjoyed it at the beginning. Again, after a while, I'm thinking, is there any point to this? It's just part of it, honestly. It's like we talked about with the Hellcat episode, when we were talking about those cat issues. They were great. It's a great character. I really liked Greer Grant Nelson. But I didn't really feel like those comics were made for girls. Well, this one, I read it, and I don't know if girls would like it, but it seems to me like girls would enjoy this
book. Yeah, I think so.
But, you know, like I said, I read it just kind of interested in it. I liked it. But after a while, I'm thinking, okay, it's losing some direction a little bit, maybe. And they're finishing up. Okay, I enjoyed reading it. It's pretty fun.
Series don't have much longevity anymore, do they?
Sometimes. I noticed some of them. The Vision, it was planned for 12 issues.
Well, what about She-Hulk? Is that still going on?
No, She-Hulk, they brought it back as another series. But I guess the series you liked with...
Pulido?
Yeah, Javier Pulido.
Is that over with?
Yeah, that finished a long time ago.
Okay. All right.
But, you know, you turned me on to that. You talked about the show, and then I found an issue in the dollar box. Well, this is really good. So I started buying them. I've been slowly going back and finding the old issues. That was a really, really, really
good series. Yeah.
But I guess that one, the sales didn't pick up, but they have another She-Hulk book out, Hawkeye, by David Aja and... Matt Fraction, that was great.
That ended, yeah.
Yeah, they ended that one, but then right after that, there's another Hawkeye series. I'll be honest, I think you and I differ. I kind of like how that series will end, and if they want to do another one, that's fine, but when the creative team leaves, they just make...
it's almost like they're doing graphic novels or trades,
Yeah, they're doing it for the trades.
Yeah.
Also, that's one problem I have with subscribing to books at comic stores was that... I like reading books by creators, and I didn't always know when the creative team was going to change.
Yeah.
And I didn't want to, you know, if I subscribe, they're not going to think about it. They're just going to keep putting the book in. And I don't, if I'm reading the book by Dave Cockrum, I don't want to pick one up if Sal Buscema takes over the book. You know
what
I mean?
I would, but I love Sal Buscema.
Yeah, but I'm just saying.
The one that I want to mention is that Wolverine series by... Alan Davis, in the middle, there was some other artist did an issue, and I was like, huh.
He did three issues.
And then Alan Davis came back again.
Yeah.
And I was like, why?
Yeah, and that's I don't know, that's one thing that just irritates me to no end. I don't know why, because Alan Davis is good at keeping up with things. Something happened. But, yeah, I like it when the same creative team stays on. There was sometimes
you get somebody better.
Yeah, or whatever that book was we were... That X-Men book Dallas and I talked about last time, you know, we were reading it through electronic trades. But I guess as the third trade, one issue was a guest artist. I didn't like him as well as the artist that's been doing the book, but, you know, first I'm like, oh, wait a minute. Said, well, actually, this guy is really good. Or I don't remember if it was a man or a woman, but the artist is really good, had a different take, and I would read a series by that person. You know, that one didn't bother me quite so much, but... That's one thing I find. I like series where the creative team stays consistent all the way through, with a few exceptions. So I don't know. But anyway, it's been nice.
I kind of liked it when, like, X-Men was being done by Werner Roth, and then all of a sudden Steranko comes over, and then Neil Adams comes over. That was a good surprise. That doesn't happen too often.
Yeah, there was some neat ones. A lot of times I find when I was reading comic books, again with some exceptions, that you'd have an artist you really like, and then that artist leaves, and they bring somebody else in, and like, I don't know. It's just,
well, I think in the Hawkeye series, Frank Avila did a couple of issues in between the
Hawkeye issues. They had some other ones, too, besides Frank
Avila. That was a nice surprise.
Yeah. The fill-in issues on that were really good, and then Annie Wu did some of them.
Yeah.
And I have to admit, I liked hers, too. But they did something like with Annie Wu did them. It's when the female Hawkeye went to the other coast and she was drawing those. So it wasn't like it was just the same storyline with a different artist. It was related, but it veered off. So they were clever how they did it. All right, one thing I was going to talk about.
Oh yeah, I have some of these.
Now, you've mentioned, I got this confused with something else. That's Gotham Central. It's the first issue. I found it at the Dollar Box at Nerd Out Comics when Al and I went there and did the last episode that didn't come out. I've never read the book before. I'm a huge Michael Lark fan. I liked him on, I forgot the name, Terminal City. And this one, he's drawn in a different style. Britt told me one time, he says, he must have discovered Alex Toth. Well, Michael Lark said that style he did for Terminal City wasn't a natural style, and he didn't want to go back to it because it's so much work. It's still Michael Lark, but he's got a rough finish to it. But Gotham Central, I thought I'd read it before. What I ended up reading was a book called Batman Nine Lives. I read the trade to that, which again was Michael Lark. But I think that one was If Batman Never Existed. This one, it's about the Gotham police force, and they refer to the Bat. Mr. Freeze shows up and kills one officer and hurts another one. And when they're talking about, he went to the commissioner, who isn't Gordon, and asked him, says, please don't signal the Bat. He says, I feel like we need to do this for ourselves. And I thought, that's interesting. And then when they were talking about it, the commissioner says, well, the Bat's always helped us out, but we'll try to do this with our own. I don't know. I thought that was interesting. It was really strong. I see Detective Montoya. I see Maggie Sawyer. I see they even have the thing with the night shift and the day shift and, getting promotions and people mad about, it's like watching Hill Street Blues or working in your own office. It's human stuff.
Right.
Even though they talk about Mr. Freeze and stuff like that, I really liked it. Come to find out, this isn't, I guess they put this one out because Gotham was a TV show. It says Fox Fall, so this is a special edition.
Is that show still on the air?
I don't know. I just know it was on the air.
I think there's a Batman show on the air that doesn't have Batman in it.
Well, there was one called Gotham, which is about Bruce Wayne going to school.
I think that's it.
Maybe it is Gotham.
Yeah.
That's the show.
Oh, wait, no, that's Gotham, the show, and that's Gotham Central, the comic book. Okay.
I thought there was a Gotham Central TV show, but I guess not. The Gotham show is funny because I just mentioned Fat Man on Batman. Well, he had Paul Dini, for the Batman series. He's written, or Batman Animated, and he's written a lot of Batman comic books. He created Harley Quinn.
He draws, too, doesn't he?
Paul Dini?
No, he doesn't draw. Oh, so it's Bruce Timm. Oh, here goes the car alarm.
That's okay. But we need Batman.
Oh, God.
But no, Paul Dini, I don't know if he ever drew or not, but he was always known as a writer. But he was on Kevin Smith's Fat Man on Batman several times. And at one point, they start talking about, they came up with their own show about Gotham Academy.
Right.
And it was about Bruce Wayne after his parents were dead, and he was going through school and learning. He was talking about, Alfred would be raising him. And then they talk about, the place, and I can't remember who was going to be the professor. It's all right, man. Modern problems. But
every day that stupid car does that.
Really?
And I keep telling her, take the alarm off during the day so it doesn't go off. Because it doesn't go off at night. It goes off during the day. Sorry, everybody.
Yeah, it's funny. That's something that went away. Not trying to get off subject, but I remember car alarms. It worked. There was three guys at Trans Ams, and every time lightning strike or something like that.
Keep talking because I'm going to unlock the door so it doesn't happen again.
But they would just bust out of the place running because their car alarm would be on like three times a night. I remember a friend of mine would get upset saying, "Why don't you just turn the alarm, the sensitivity alarm down?" But in my neighborhood back in the 80s, there was three or four cars around the neighborhood on all sides of us where their car alarm would go off two or three times a night, and it'd stay on for quite a while. That's something that's kind of vanished since then.
Yeah, I know. No, this is we don't know what this problem is with the car. I think it just does it because it's haunted.
Well, that makes sense.
I think it's just haunted. My mom thinks animals get in underneath it during the day and play with the wires and shut it off. But that car alarm has been on, and I walk out and bump into the car, and it won't go off. So I have no idea what's going on. It's haunted, man.
You know, outside the karate school, sometimes my partner and I, after class, stay outside and talk for a while. There's a mockingbird. You know, mockingbird picks up on,
yeah,
you know, whatever they hear.
Oh, yeah, I know mockingbirds. There was one outside my window a few months ago. But it wouldn't shut up.
We would just sit there and listen to it. And then at one point, my partner says, "Stop, listen to that bird." And he did different bird calls. And at one part, he would start doing, and then he'd have a doot doot. You know, I think that's a car alarm. And you could hear it turn off, doot doot. And then he'd start, you know, doing other bird calls and stuff like that. And all of a sudden, it'd be the car alarm again. And then a doot doot. I thought, my God, I hear it all the time now. And I think that's just insanity.
There was a freaking mockingbird, okay, about 2 months ago. And it was outside my window. It must have been nesting there. And the son of a gun would start squawking like at 2 in the morning, okay, waking me up. And then one day I just got so angry that he was going off. I went up to the window and went boom, 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 really loud like that and scared the crap out of him. He never came back again, thankfully.
When I was a kid, there used to be a cartoon show. It was based off those Post cereals. There was Linus the Lionheart, the Sugar Bear from Sugar Crisp was on it. That So High, who was from Frosted Rice Crinkles.
Yep.
He was a little Chinese kid. And Lovable Truly from Alphabets. It was those four characters. I watched it all the time when I was a kid. And but Linus the Lionheart, you know, he was the king of the jungle. He was, and they had two birds, and one of them was a mockingbird. And that bird drove me insane because all he did was repeat whatever you said, and it seemed like he didn't have a clue. Because one bird, I can't remember what kind of bird he was, but he was always grouchy and nasty.
Jekyll like, and Jekyll? No.
No, it was Linus and Lionhearted. It was one of, you know, there's a bunch of animals in it. But he was always grouchy, but the mockingbird, I was like 4 years old when I watched this show. But God, it's all he does is repeat whatever anybody says. And one time, one of the characters was hiding in the bushes because something was going on, and they were observing something. I said, "Be quiet, be quiet." I said, "Be quiet, don't talk." I said, "Be quiet, don't talk." I go, why do they bring him around? He's irritating. But so I don't know. I've lost my hatred for mockingbirds, but you know,
I don't mind him during the day.
Anyway, back to Gotham Central, or Gotham Academy.
That Paul Dini, good ice cream sandwich, yeah, by the way.
Paul Dini and Kevin Smith. We're planning this. You know, we could do a TV series about our comic series. And later start talking about a TV series. And they planned over, I don't know how many episodes, they planned this whole thing out about, I guess it was the Scarecrow was going to be the principal. And slowly you start seeing these characters that were somehow a teacher there or something else. And ended up becoming, you know, one of the characters, Riddler or whatever, the Penguin. And it sounded like one of the neatest ideas I ever heard. But it's just basically about Bruce Wayne as a kid getting his education and developing Batman. And basically said, we should do this. And Paul Dini was always setting up a synopsis and sending it as a submission. I'm going to submit it now. Wow, this is going to be something. You got on the creative thing. And then three or four episodes, and then all of a sudden they came back and said, well, we plan to come to find out Fox has already had something coming out this fall. Great minds think alike, but...
Yeah, tell me about it.
You know, I mean, I see that happen all the time. Anyway, Gotham Central, in the back of this book, it's got tons of Batman books advertised, and I guess,
you know... That's a lot.
Yeah, but it also has Gotham Central Book 1, In the Line of Duty, Gotham Central Book 2, Jokers and Madmen, Gotham Central Book 3, On the Freak Beat, Gotham Central Book 4, Corrigan. And then Batman Year One, that's a great one. And then Batman Earth One, which I've never read. But I don't know, I'm interested in the Gotham Central books now, because this is actually good.
Hey, speaking of TV, a comic book on TV shows, have you watched Riverdale?
No.
Okay, me neither, so we can't really talk about
What's
it.
What's it on?
CW?
Oh,
whatever
yeah.
channel that is, I don't know.
That's Channel 44.
Okay, whatever comes out on cable, I've never watched it yet. I heard it's pretty different from the comic book, but I was just wondering, you know, if you had seen it.
It's always... That TV show Supergirl, it used to be on CBS, and now it's on CW. Once in a while, I'll catch it. I watched that one. A lot of people that we worked with, younger people, they liked Smallville, which I guess is on CW.
Yeah.
And then they, what was, there's some other, Flash, that's a big one. Arrow, that's a big one.
Yeah.
But Flash was on Supergirl when it was on CBS. That was actually pretty good. I guess she was on Flash once, but I never watched Flash. A lot of people these days know the TV shows. A friend of mine, he's retired now, I used to work with. I was talking to him through email, and he said he was getting his comic fix, because I guess he's always watching Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. on TV, and he was watching the Daredevil Netflix show. I saw one episode, that was really good. But he was talking about... He had a handful of those shows. I don't know if it really, you know, qualifies comic books, but he loved them. He was watching them all the time. So it's all ages. I mean, young people, old people.
Well, I heard the Riverdale is like for, it's more adult than anything. I was like, Archie's, like Miss Grundy's not is good looking, and Archie's having an affair with her. It's kind of oddball. I don't know, but I just wondering.
It sounds, I never watched these shows, but it sounds like, remember Melrose Place and Beverly Hills 90120?
Yeah, I think they're trying to combine that, and I think they said they were trying to put some Twin Peaks weirdness in it. I don't know. I just haven't seen it yet.
Sometimes that can make or break a show, because no TV show or movie has ever really been quite like the comics.
I
think if you try to make it exactly like the comics, it's not going to work.
Yeah.
But sometimes, what turned me off is a lot of times, they don't seem like, why even bother with a comic? Why don't you just make your own thing? You know, they didn't seem like a superhero thing. I mean, the Marvel movies actually do a pretty good job of staying with that, even though I don't really watch them.
Well, you know, one of the reasons why, like, the Afterlife with Archie and the Sabrina books don't come out that often is because the writer of the books is the guy who writes Riverdale.
Yeah.
So that was actually affecting the comic books. It's like, wait a minute. Finish the comic books and then do the TV show. You know, that's not how, in a perfect world, but, you know, we're not living in a perfect world, so that's the way that goes. But, yeah, you know, I mean, again, you know, there's so many channels, I can't keep up with them. I don't know what time it's on. I don't have a DVR. So, hey, whatever.
Well,
you know, maybe it's good.
If it was a perfect world, Tony Iommi never would have lost his fingers, and we'd never have Black Sabbath the way we want.
That would have been a bummer. I like Black Sabbath.
What I mean? I'm sorry he lost his fingers, but...
Yeah, but it was for a good cause.
It turned out getting something unexpected.
Well, that's because he took a lemon and made lemonade out of
right.
it. It's not that easy to do.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. That sometimes it's not in a perfect world, maybe it wouldn't be so good.
Yeah, definitely.
All right, I'm going to talk about something else that I've kind of forgotten about. Another Dollar Box Dive, Doctor Strange, Sorcerer Supreme. I bought this, the cover, I've got number 2, and the cover is Doctor Strange with the Dormammu's head on it.
Yep.
Well, that got my attention. I liked the drawing. I thought, well, that's kind of neat. I love the Dormammu, even though I thought they snuffed the flame of him in the, I think, 86? In the early 80s, I really liked the Doctor Strange. I always liked Doctor Strange.
You liked the Gene Colan ones.
Those,
in the 80s.
I read, no, his were earlier than that.
No, he redid them again in the 80s. He redid Doctor Strange in the 80s, I think.
Oh, I didn't know those.
The one in the 60s was cool because he had that black mask on.
That lasted for a short period of time.
That was cool, though.
See, I didn't like that.
I liked it, man.
Okay, when Al's talking about Doctor Strange's mask... In the Marvel calendar, they did 1974. It had Doctor Strange had 1 month, and then each day of the month they had little jokes and somebody's birthday and all that. And they had a picture of Doctor Strange with the mask. It says Doctor Strange got a new look, and then it's like the next day it says readers complained about Doctor Strange's new look. Well, in that Marvel Comics Treasury Edition Christmas stories, holiday stories, they had that issue where something happened. I can't remember who he was fighting. But Gene Colan drew it, and I remember that him and Clea are walking out in like Times Square, and there's snow, and Cleo didn't know what it was. And he explained, he goes, that's one of the rougher things living here. And he says, I could cast a spell where the snow never touches us. And she goes, don't you dare. I like the snow. You know, she looked at it from a childlike approach. Anyway, something happened, and he couldn't appear as Doctor Strange anymore. So he said, no worries. And he cast a spell, and he turned to Doctor Strange in the mask. Many are the faces of Doctor Strange. Oh, that's going to fool everybody. He had the same cape, you know. I mean, the costume was close to the same, just the mask, and I think his gloves are different or something.
I liked it.
See, I don't know. It kind of turned him into a superhero. He was a superhero, but he turned him more into
a superhero, yeah.
And I thought, I read it as a past tense thing. No, the Doctor Strange I was talking about was... It wasn't. I don't think it was a regular Doctor Strange title. It was some other Marvel title featuring Doctor Strange. But
oh, those were the Frank Bruner ones, weren't they?
Those were before that. Marshall Rogers has drawn it, I think.
Oh, yeah, I remember that. Doctor Strange has had like 9 million
series. No, absolutely. But to me...
The
ones I think about the most is the Steve Ditko Doctor Strange, the Bill Everett Doctor Strange, the Gene Colan Doctor Strange, and Frank Bruner. Those are the artists I always remember doing Doctor Strange. But then, I don't know, I don't know who was doing it by this point, but then later Steve Englehart, I think, was writing them.
Atkins did them for a while.
Yeah, he did some.
He did some, yeah.
But then all of a sudden, who was it? Well, Marshall Rogers was drawing them, and then Paul Smith did an issue or two.
Yep.
And Michael Golden did one really fantastic issue. And then at one point, I think Carl Potts took over as editor. And that was, to me, it was a heyday because every issue was basically somebody different. And they were all single-issue stories. And I remember, I think Carl Potts drew it. But it was about Doctor Strange met this guy. He was an Eastern, he was an Asian guy. But he, it was a martial arts using sound, using your voice. Well, that's a really neat, it was a neat story. So I was kind of taking magic to different areas where it was skill and stuff. And then after that, I remember one of my favorite issues, and I don't know who wrote it, but Tony Salmons drew it. And this blonde girl showed up at the mansion, and she was pretty, and she could just do whatever she wanted. She came in, and Wong was saying, well, the master's occupied, and she said, oh, he'll want to see me. And she just kind of goes through, and Wong's kind of perplexed. But basically, she could just manipulate you to do whatever you wanted. Well, then she got to Doctor Strange, and she's trying to do the same thing, and he basically told Wong, magic has many different forms. And he says, young lady, your possible magic isn't going to work for me. Well, basically, it wasn't magic. It was just that she was good-looking, and she had charms and knew how to... And when I read that, I thought, my God, that's why Cleo left him. He's gay. That's why they don't work on him. But anyway, she finally admitted the reason she came. Her father was an artist, and he went crazy. He went mad. And then kind of found out, he said, I do know who your father is. He was a well-known artist. Well, it turns to find, God, Tony Salmons just tore that piece up, because the man looked kind of like Einstein slightly, the way he drew him. But he was drawing, he says, old man, it's as nutty as a hatter. But you can still push a pencil. And whatever he drew came to life. So all through the story, it was all these little creatures like a Salvador Dali, you know, was doodling all over the place. And they were coming to life. And then kind of find out it was some kind of demon, you know, took over the guy. That's where all of a sudden his artwork went from mundane to fantastic. Doctor Strange exercised it. And then he told the lady, is this going to be normal? Yeah, he's normal, but his artwork's never going to be as brilliant as it was. What a great story. I bought that on the Kitty Hawk in the toiletry store. And I thought, man, this is the greatest book I read. But every issue was different. And then finally, I think a guy named Chris Warner started
Chris
drawing.
Chris Warner, yeah.
For a while.
And, he did that series, I think, even though that's by Richard Case.
Yeah.
I think Chris Warner did some of
those. Chris Warner went over to do Batman at DC and I guess didn't do very well over there. But all the, and Steve Laiolo did some stories when he fought Dracula.
Everybody drew Doctor Strange.
Yeah, it was a great time, and the books were neat. But what was in Paul? Like I said, I think Paul Smith went back and drew some. But the whole time there was this Cleo left Doctor Strange, which didn't make any sense to me. But she was saying that some woman Doctor Strange helped. She saw that there was a possibility between them because I guess past lives or something. So Cleo left him, and then Doctor Strange started freaking out. And all these bad things started happening. And then they kept showing Cleo. It was the revolution against the Dormammu. And you had all these rebels running out screaming, snuff the flame. And Cleo was leading it. Well, finally, that was always a subplot throughout all these books. And finally, at one point, Doctor Strange had to go help. And his big rebellion finished with the Dormammu being snuffed out. One of my favorite times. I really liked it. Oh, that's something. I liked the Dormammu. He was a great bad guy. Anyway, this one, came out sometime in 88, I think, or 89?
Yep.
Yeah, 89.
He did, Case drew the Doom Patrol. Back from that era, he drew the Doom Patrols.
Yeah. But this one, Peter Gillis wrote it, and Richard Case drew it. Okay, well, he's a good artist. I didn't think the Doom Patrol looked as good. But anyway, the Dormammu takes over Doctor Strange. And this is one of the wildest stories I ever read, because Doctor Strange is gone. The Dormammu takes over. He's in New York, Cosmos Trouble. And Doctor Strange becomes a rat, which ties into Walt Simonson's Thor story when Thor was turned into a frog. Al, if you didn't read it, then you're going to have to stop. We're going to have to stop. You're going to have to go find those issues and read them right now, because they're awesome.
I remember.
But anyway, the frog, I think, is Puddlegump, who helped Thor. He remembered Thor, so they're helping the rat, even though they were mortal enemies. But anyway, Doctor Strange is the rat, is telling them how to set up the circles and stuff. And they call an earth spirit to help them. Anyway, hilarity ensues, as Mal always says. It was pretty wild. It goes on and on and on. He finally gets back. And before the issue's over, they stop the Dormammu and he takes over his body again. And then Cleo finds... No, somebody else finds the rat that's there with Cleo. Anyway, I'm kind of confused. It's been a while. Anyway, I liked it. I'm not going to go out. Oh, this ties into Inferno, which I never read.
That
in
was
Marvel
an X-Men series, too. Well, I think everybody was involved in
it. I thought
that
was one of those cross...
It was a crossover. I remember X-Men issues.
Yeah,
it
was a big event for the summer.
Yeah, the usual summer blockbuster.
Which I never read Inferno. I do remember some of the Marvel books. I think Excalibur or something. Inferno was part of it. It was always a background.
Yeah.
But anyway, this is number two of Doctor Strange, Sorcerer Supreme. I liked it. I found the dollar box. I don't know if I'm going to seek out the other issues.
Well, you know, maybe if you see number one or three, you might... Maybe they'll be good too.
If they're in the dollar
box, I probably
box.
Have them somewhere. But God knows where.
Well, like I said, I picked it up. I did enjoy it. It was fun, and there was enough references to books that I read at the time that I understood what was going on. So anyway, Doctor Strange rules. I never saw the movie, but
nice.
Anyway, we've talked quite a bit. I'm glad we finally got to some comics on this episode.
Yeah, we did a lot.
All right, anything else you want to finish with?
No, I thought I had something over there, but no, I'll do it next time.
All right, we'll get it next time. Anyway, thanks for listening, and we'll see you on the other side. Bye.
Hey, Don, I think you forgot something.
Oh, yeah, that's right. Okay. Thanks for listening, and in the meantime,
read more comics.
You can find Al's other podcast, Slow Robot A Go-Go, Dallas's webcomic, The Mighty Blue, and Al's blog, Destination Nightmare, on the sidebar of our blog at bunchofdorks.com.
And click on the Cyclops!
My name is Mao, and with me as always...
Dr. Morbius?
From Parts Unknown.
Question mark?
This is the promo for Slow Robot A Go-Go, the B through Z grade movie review podcast.
Yes, B through Z. You know what that means, kids?
Mostly Z grade.
That's right.
If that's obscure and you've never heard of it and it's horrible, we're your men. We're your men. We're here. We're the dudes that are going to review it and talk about it. And you're going to be like, why would they talk about that? And we don't know either.
And then you're going to want to run out and get these movies and pay big money, Blu-ray money to get these movies because they're all great and you're all going to love them.
We're waiting for that phone call, Criterion. If you want a hungover idiot and a guy who knows a lot about movies that no one's ever heard of,
who's another idiot too.
We're your men. We're here for you, man.
We're the usual gang of idiots.
But anyway, go to bunchofdorks.com. Click on the first button. That's Slow Robot A Go-Go, and then you're gonna hear all about B movies that you never knew existed.
That's right.
And then click the other buttons for fun and enjoyment.
Two dimension button, which is what we're on right now. Comic books. And all that other good stuff. Go to Radio St. Pete. We got other podcasts on there, too.
We got crazy podcasts out the wazoo. We've lost our minds.
Hey, lady.
Oh, no.